What will a diplomatic boycott of the Beijing Winter Olympics achieve? Canada is the latest country to join Australia, Britain and the United States to protest against China's human rights record. But are deeper political issues at play? This is Inside Story. Hello and welcome to the program. I'm Nick Clark. Sport and politics often mix whenever the Olympic Games are held. It will apparently be no different for the Beijing Winter Games due to begin in February. Despite China's repeated denials of human rights violations and suppression of freedoms, particularly in Xinjiang and Hong Kong, the Chinese leadership is coming under increasing scrutiny. Canada is joining the US, Britain and Australia in a diplomatic boycott of the Games. Athletes from the four countries will still go to Beijing, but government representatives won't be there for the opening and closing ceremonies or to attend official functions. So far, other countries seem more reluctant to join in. France's president calls the boycott insignificant and pointless.
I don't think we should politicize this to make very small and symbolic measures. Either we say we're going to do a complete boycott, we're not going to send any athletes, or we're going to try to re-engage and have workable, useful actions. I'm more in favour of doing things that have a useful effect.
Well, aside from human rights, the four boycotting countries have other concerns about China. For example, Donald Trump launched a trade war because of what the former US president said were China's unfair practices. Britain and several Western nations have banned the Chinese telecoms company Huawei from their networks because of concerns that the Chinese government agents could infiltrate the equipment for spying. When Canadian police arrested Huawei executive Meng Wanzhou at Washington's request, police in China swiftly detained two Canadians. All have since been released. And Australia angered Beijing by demanding an international investigation into the origins of COVID-19. China is warning the four boycotting nations that they will pay a price.
I want to point out that the Beijing Winter Olympics Games is a stage for winter sports athletes. Any act that attempts to politicize sports in the name of human rights and freedom violates the spirit of the Olympic Charter. China is firmly opposed to that.
All right, let's bring in our guest. From Seoul in South Korea, Victor Tiao is a political scientist affiliated with the Cold War Project at the University of Cambridge. Here in Doha, Ross Griffin is a Middle East editor of the International Journal of the History of Sports. And from Portland in the US state of Oregon, we have Jules Boykoff, chair of the Pacific University's Politics and Government Department. He's also a former professional and Olympic footballer. A warm welcome to you all. Victor Tiao, I'd like to start with you first in Seoul, if I may. This boycott, is it driven by a real objection to Chinese human rights abuses, or is it all about countries' individual spats with China?
Well, I think there have always been genuine concerns about human rights with China in particular. And this has been, if you like, a constant issue in Sino-US relations since 1972 when the US and China normalized their relations. But having said that, This human rights concern did not prevent the Americans from establishing good relations with China, throughout the Cold War, in the latter part of the Cold War, and right up to the Donald Trump administration. So the question is why now, and why make a big issue over human rights? Because they have coexisted quite well over the past, well, I would say 40, 50 years, even though human rights has been a concern. So I think at the heart of the issue is not just about human rights, but really a geopolitical tussle between, first of all, the Chinese and the Americans. And secondly, there are domestic political considerations on the part of the Biden administration. This is due to the fact that the Republicans have been going very strong, criticizing the Biden administration for not going harder on China. So the Biden administration wants to be seen doing something, to confront the Chinese. And I think they picked this Olympic issue as one of the things that they feel that they could they could actually do to, right, you know, fend off criticisms.
Sure. Jules Boykoff, what's your thought? Why now? Why make such a big issue of human rights when, you know, it's often just ignored?
I think that's exactly right, that the Olympics provide an opportunity to speak out about what are gross human rights violations in China. In the United States, essentially, China has become a bipartisan punching bag. Both Republicans and Democrats are beating up on China right now. It's a very fraught moment. I mean, the U.S. Defense Department needs no assistance whatsoever when it comes to the political demonization of the country. And I think that's what we're seeing right now. Back in 2018, there was a poll that was done to assess in the United States what they believe, people here believed the threat of China was, and it was only 48% in 2018 thought that China was a threat. Earlier this year, yet another poll, up to 67%. And so the Olympics provide this huge spectacle that the entire world watches. But we're seeing something wider happening here in the United States, what I think is arguably the political demonization of the United States, and it has serious potential ramifications.
Ross Griffin, I'm wondering to what degree this can have an effect anyway. I mean, how much of a statement is being made by government officials not attending in this way? Because, you know, after all, it's the athletes that count here, and they're still going.
In many ways, these kind of boycotts are very much a symbolic thing. By letting the athletes go, take the US, for example, they still get that moral victory, if you want to look at it from a medal table perspective, which is so often used to judge how successful a nation is in comparison to others. We often see it with the Summer Olympic Games. So by telling their athletes you cannot go, you're penalizing or punishing these people who've put their lives on hold for 4 years to train for these games. But by letting them go, you get that good grace of your athletes competing, and you also get the possibility of asserting that ideological dominance where you can actually win. And by suggesting a boycott, you are raising that awareness of the alleged issue that you think is a concern that the rest of the world should take heed of. So we're looking at it in terms of, like, to listening to Macron's words there a few minutes ago, an athlete-only boycott, or one that pulls the athletes out of the games, is one that's a very, very clumsy move. But this one has a possibility of showing or applying a bit of finesse to the situation that would allow countries like the US to win on both sides.
Yeah, yeah. China says it doesn't care, doesn't it? And, you know, as far as they're concerned, Victor Chiao, there is already some impact, isn't it? Because China's not achieving what it hoped to gain from this, and that is positive PR, of course. And right now, all anybody is talking about is human rights abuses and not sport.
Well, they have been talking about the Xinjiang issue for a long while now, mm-hmm. So it's not just this couple of months. I think insofar when China is concerned, this couple of years has always been about damage control, not so much about propagating and building a positive image. So this is one of the considerations in China now. Regardless of what they say, the Americans and Japan and whoever else is going to say what they like. So, but it's not only so much the administrations of these countries. It's also the social media and the mass media in general, because these countries have a free press that the Chinese have no control over. So I think the Chinese have largely, not put building a positive image abroad in these countries a top priority. But at the same time, I think I want to highlight that the Chinese have a zero COVID policy. So they are somewhat concerned about the influx of a large number of people coming into China at the same time. So they are ambivalent about this. They want to host a successful Olympics, but at the same time, they want to limit the number of foreigners coming into the country.
All right, well, we've had boycotts before. Olympic boycotts aren't new, but they've always involved the athletes themselves. In 1980, the US pulled its athletes out of the Moscow Summer Olympics in protest against the Soviet invasion of Afghanistan. The Soviet Union and its allies got their own back on the Americans by boycotting the following Olympics, held in Los Angeles in 1984. All the while, New Zealand has said it's not sending officials to the Beijing Olympics due to pandemic health concerns. And Japan is, among other countries, reported to be considering diplomatic boycotts of the games. Ross Griffin, these boycotts, when they've involved athletes as well, what kind of success have they had in implementing change down the line?
It's a tough one to call, and it's a very subjective one per the Games. I think everybody recalls the most famous boycotts in 1980 and 1984, as you mentioned there. But in terms of effectiveness, the 1976 Games in Montreal, it often goes under the radar, where you had, I think it was 28 African nations who boycotted the Montreal Games because New Zealand, as you just mentioned a few seconds ago, they embarked on a rugby tour in South Africa that summer. And this was in the wake of the Soweto riots in May or June of that year. And it was one of the more effective boycotts in that it raised a huge amount of awareness about what was actually happening in apartheid South Africa. And it gave a very strong impression of a united Africa against apartheid. And that was one of the few successful boycotts of an Olympic Games to actually achieve anything. If you look at the two later ones, the ones immediately following that, America and 64, 65 other countries boycotted those games, but still many athletes from the likes of Britain or Australia, they participated in the games anyway under an Olympic flag or under their national committee, so they still attended. The Americans were the only ones who really withheld their athletes, punishing their athletes essentially, and it didn't achieve anything in the greater scheme of things. The Soviet invasion of Afghanistan didn't finish till 1988 or something, so its political aims were ultimately a failure. But if you go back through the history of the Olympics, there has been various boycotts or suggestions of boycotts, and not many of them have actually achieved anything of note, anything of tangible worth.
So, Jules Boykoff, is it likely that this kind of more perhaps subtle approach could work, could apply pressure on the Chinese government? Is it likely to make any difference?
Well, I would first just say China boycotted the 1980 Olympics in the Soviet Union as well. And also China boycotted in 1964 the Tokyo Games. And so all of a sudden they very much changed their tune and saying these days that the Olympics shouldn't be political. Well, they were very political for China back in that time frame. In terms of moving forward, I mean, I think what's interesting to keep an eye on is, will countries expand the diplomatic boycott into a potential athlete boycott? Athletes are very much in the middle on this one. And if you think about it, who put them there? The International Olympic Committee put the athletes in this very difficult position. If athletes were to lead a boycott in Beijing, which I don't anticipate, but is certainly a possibility, that could be extraordinarily powerful and effective. If governments, as what happened in 1980 and 1984, decide not to send their athletes, that could be a real dud. After all, here in the United States and other countries where athletes did not go to the Olympics, there's a real sour taste in the mouth. You have numerous Olympians with asterisks next to their names, and they're feeling pretty crummy about it. And they've been quite vociferous about feeling crummy about it. And so I don't anticipate that, but the diplomatic boycott that we see in place allows for countries to prevent China from engaging in what we call these days sports washing, using these big sports mega events to try to launder your international reputation on the world stage. In other words, scrub away the human rights violations and try to look legitimate on the world stage. And the diplomatic boycott has been effective about talking about rights violations instead of how wonderful China is for hosting this mega event.
The thing is, Jules, Macron, the French president, says you shouldn't politicize the Olympics, but how can you not, when you have stories of not only like the human rights abuses, but the current story of the tennis star Peng Shui, who's been censored?
Absolutely. Well, first of all, when Macron says we shouldn't intersect politics and sports, we might want to keep in mind that Paris is slated to host the 2024 right. Olympics, the Summer Olympics. And so they might be a little reticent to speak out on this in order to stay inside of the good graces of the International Olympic Committee, which, by the way, the International Olympic Committee has said from its inception that politics and sports don't mix. But that has been a fairy tale from day one. After all, the plucky French aristocrat Baron Pierre de Coubertin, who assembled the first International Olympic Committee, brought together political power brokers and knew he understood they needed their support for the Olympics to survive. Skitter ahead to 1936, when Hitler used the Olympics as a trampoline for his invasion of Europe. Think ahead to the Cold War, we've already been talking about, where the Olympics were essentially a proxy battle zone for the United States and Soviet Union and all of their allies and satellites, all the way to today, where it's obviously political. So the Olympics are political through and through. And anybody who tells you otherwise is probably milking the Olympic cow with both hands. In other words, what I'm saying is they're making their money off the Olympic Games.
Right. And so, Ross Griffin, shouldn't there be more onus on the International Olympic Committee to manage this? And perhaps it should be more about not awarding big events like this to countries with say, a poor track record in human rights.
Yeah, but the IOC is, like, it's not a neutral broker in all of this. As Jesse mentioned, the 1936 Games in Berlin, the IOC has a track record of giving games to varied nations with a dubious background. What's often forgotten in history is that the games after the Hitler Games, if you want to call them that, were going to Japan in 1940, only for the outbreak of World War II. So, with a lot of events nowadays, there are other concerns other than, I suppose, sports washing or what's going on in the background. A lot of nations, a lot of cities, they don't want the games. They can't afford them. I think the bidding for the Paris Games was almost shambolic for a finish because a lot of countries or a lot of cities, they pulled out. Rome being one, I think it was Montreal was the other, where they had plebiscites that were, people were saying, we don't want to spend millions upon millions on these games when we need schools, we need roads, we need hospitals improved or built or infrastructure improved. So the field is narrowing for countries that are willing to put up their hand and host these kinds of games.
Victor Tiar, do you think there's a split now in the way the West wants to deal with China? Because as far as this is concerned, there's distinctly not a unified approach. US top brass might not be attending, but the UN Secretary General has been invited, and he's signaling that he's going to attend the opening of the Games.
I wouldn't say that it's a split. It has always been this case. The United States is the most powerful country in the world, but it still is unable to get its way all the time. There are many issues that some of the allies are willing to go along, and some issues that the allies are not willing to go along. So in this case, like I said, France is obviously saying a different thing, but I suspect the French are reacting to the previous episode where the US displaced the French in the Australian submarine deal, and the French president is now trying to, I wouldn't say it's a payback, but it's trying to say something very different to show its own kind of leadership within the Western bloc. There are other allies, U.S. allies, that are also saying differently. So if you look at the Japanese and the South Koreans, they are also pretty ambivalent about following the U.S. into this diplomatic boycott. Japanese Prime Minister has actually said that they would take their national interests into consideration. What this usually means is that he's still thinking. There are, of course, voices within Japan from the conservative party, the LDP. They have been, whipping up, using the Chinese as the punching bag for the last I would say, 9 years. Shinzo Abe has come out, the previous prime minister, has come out very strongly saying that Japan should join the boycott. But Kishida, I think he wants to have a good relations with the United States, but at the same time, he is very mindful of the fragility of Japan. China relations, and then I think what he wants to prevent the relations from deteriorating. When it comes to the Koreans, the South Koreans have a different idea. They were the host of the previous Winter Games. So the Korean government has actually come out saying that South Korea has a role as the host of the previous Games. It's signaling that it's unlikely to join the boycott, although they might be pressured into sending a delegation with not so senior officials to Beijing. So I guess the point is that different countries, even if they are allied with the United States, might actually react differently to this, whatever proposal that the US puts on the table.
Sure. Jules, China's pretty angry about this, saying it's going to fight back and resolute countermeasures it talks of, and countries will pay the price for their mistaken acts. What do you think that reaction will be? How do you think they can fight back?
Well, they have a lot of measures at their disposal, given their economic power right now, as well as their influence around the world, thanks to their Belt and Road Initiative. They have a lot of people that have endeared themselves to China. And we shouldn't forget the fact that they have made a lot of friends over the years. So, yes, economic sanctions definitely seem in the realm of possibilities. If you want to just keep it inside of the Olympic sphere, there is the Los Angeles Olympics coming up in 2028, which they have already intimated that they might try to do a diplomatic boycott in return. And so they have a lot of possibilities at their measure. You know, one thing that I think is important to put into the frame is what Mr. Griffin mentioned before about the role of the International Olympic Committee. I mean, after all, they have all these wonderful ideas inside of their Olympic charter about human rights and freedom and the dignity of the individual, which are being basically thrown out the window right now in their selection of Beijing and their backing of Beijing all the way through the Olympics, given the human rights abuses that are happening there. And I think as we move forward, it'll be interesting to see whether the verbal volleys between the United States and China distract from the fact that the International Olympic Committee created the original sin here, which is to say giving the Olympics to China, even though they knew full well there had not been advancements in human rights since China hosted the Games back in 2008.
Ross, do you think there can be any impact on this as far as the IOC is concerned?
From the boycott itself, you mean?
Yeah.
Will it change the way the IOC operates? I don't think so. As I said, I think the IOC will go to whoever's willing to host the games and to pay for the games. And the IOC seems to be very, very selective in how they deal with protest. Thinking back just to the Tokyo games where you had the American shot putter, Raven Saunders, she made her protest for the Black Lives Matter movement. And there was no real, even though she was threatened with disciplinary action, there was nothing that came against her for that protest, nor should there have been. But the IOC seems to be very, very selective in how it applies its measures in all cases, and is very willing to turn a blind eye to certain brokers, certain people, certain nations. Like a lot of these transnational sporting organizations, I think they're very, very flexible in how they adapt or apply their policies.
Victor, do you think ultimately this is more about the collision of two worldviews, more a reflection of a real world crisis that is ongoing right now between, superpowers?
Yes and no. I'm very worried about the trajectory of the U.S.-China relations because the kind of narratives we hear among the Western bloc, and of course I read the papers every day, New York Times, Wall Street Journal, Bloomberg, Reuters, the kind of things that they're saying is, you know, it's well, there's a lot of truth to that. But at the same time, there's a lot of people using China as a political football. But having said that, I pay attention to what is being said in Chinese on the Chinese side, too. And we see a reflection of what is being done in the Western press. The Chinese are actually doing it. So if you go to Chinese forum, Chinese discussion, Chinese chat groups, it's the exact same kind of demonization that's going on, and that's really worrying because we actually have a parallel universe. I'm not sure if that's a correct term to use, but a genuine separation of you know the global community that is brewing, and I think that is actually of a big concern.
And Ross, finally, if this does gain traction, I guess we should focus elsewhere, and that is that the corporate sponsors of events like this, of Coca-Cola or Airbnb, would they be reassessing their involvement in a huge event like this?
I can give you the honest answer, or I can give you the corporate answer. Honest answer, I think a lot of these companies are motivated by the bottom line, and I don't think there is a hope in hell they're ever going to isolate a market as big as China. And they'll just play ball. They will turn the same blind eye that the likes of the IOC has turned to many countries in the past 50, 60, 70, 80 years. And they'll just carry on regardless. A lot of these companies might, I think the phrase is virtue signaling and stuff like that, but at the end of the day, they are private corporations, they have shareholders or whatever, and they will be on the hoardings of the Winter Olympics next February, next year when these games happen. They will be with the IOC through thick and thin.
All right, gents, it's been a terrific discussion. Do appreciate your time. Thanks very much indeed for joining us. Thanks to all our guests, Victor Thieu, Ross Griffin and Jules Boykoff. Thanks very much. And thank you too for watching. You can see the whole program again anytime by visiting our website, aljazeera.com. And for further discussion, you can go to our Facebook page. That's facebook.com/AJ Inside Story. And you can also join the conversation on Twitter. Our handle is @AJInsideStory. From me, Nick Clark, and the whole team here, it's goodbye for now.